what happened and what it is like now and the course that is recovering. And before I turn the meeting over to Jeff, let's all unmute and give him a warm welcome.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you so much.
Beautiful meditation. Thank you.
Please don't stop. Wow, I forgot that we just jumped right into it. I thought maybe the birthdays came first, but that's how memory works. Unreliable. Hi, everybody. My name's Jeff, Jeff Camozzi, and good to see some friends here, some people I know and some people I hope to get to know better. What would be wonderful is if I at least had like a whole front page of engaged faces. So if you have a ability to get to your screen and turn your camera on, would really mean a lot to me. I'm going to, in true fashion, you know, break rules and traditions, something I just love to do. So you know, what it was like, what happened and what it's like now, we'll put that aside and do it my way tonight. with some time clean and sober, like a pretty good chunk. I really want to emphasize how it is, and then I'll tell you how I got here, and then I'll dip into how it was, or maybe we'll do a little like Tarantino thing. I'm a fan of Quentin Tarantino movies and storytelling style, so I'm gonna take a shot at like a Pulp Fiction, Kill Bill kind of thing without all the, you know, blood. So how it is now, I'll just introduce myself kind of in long form. I am somehow 54 years old and living in a beautiful area south of San Francisco near the ocean, a town that I grew up in, a coastal community. A residential general contractor by trade. I'm self-employed. I managed to resurrect my business and successful at it. I enjoy it almost all the time. And that's what I do for money. What really feeds my heart and has been a culmination of a lot of time and effort is on Wednesday nights. I have a class, Dharma Punk San Francisco, and I'm a Dharma teacher. I'm pleased to be able to call myself that after many years because my teacher calls me that now. And that's sort of like, I think, how it is. Like when your teacher calls you a teacher, you get to be a teacher. Life is really good. My wife, Emily, is here. You can tell by the last name. And we just adore each other. This has been my partner in recovery from almost the beginning. She'll be happy to tell you that she has three more weeks than I do, and I hope it always stays that way. And I've been with the Refuge Recovery community and program since the book was launched. There's just, you know, I want to say in its infancy in 2014. And prior to that, I managed to find the Dharma Punks community, which led to this, you know, to knowing the Noah Levine and the community as it was growing. A strange turn of events that really like just past the point of giving up, that this Noah Levine character cooked me and went and wrote this one. You know, he wrote a book on recovering from addiction when I was on my last leg. And there was just a real radical shift in my entire outlook, my self-perception, what I thought my place was in this world, and what I thought of other people that happened over the course of a couple of weeks, and just a couple of fantastic events happened. So I'm going to back up just a little bit before my sobriety date. I'll tell you about this thing that happened in a 12-step meeting. I was a menace, just a menace, and would show up drunk often to the trying to get out of this prison that I was in with alcohol, and I would put a few days together and then really slam hard and show up and be incoherent and obnoxious and crying and being making sense, and there was sort of an out of body experience there at one of these meetings where I just saw myself. And I left the meeting, before it had ended, and went out to my truck, and I was probably deciding whether I should drive it off a cliff or just gonna go straight to the bar, And this guy came out and knocked on my window. He goes, "Hey, you all right now?" And I've been kind of watching this guy. He looked like what I was supposed to look like, Had some time, kind of a, an older skater type. And I said, "Look, I can't go back in there ever again, not after that, I had just told everybody off in the place, right? It was just a real asshole." And he kind of shook his head and he goes, "You know what? You don't know, man." He goes, you don't know. He goes, you might have saved somebody's life tonight. He goes, "Besides, we need you to come help make coffee next week." And those two things that this guy said to me did something. He just hit the spot, somehow it made sense. It ain't all about me. And maybe those people think I'm worthy, just by showing up and just being here and kind of laying myself on the mercy of the court, That and I'm a worker among workers. So showing up to do something that, you mean the meeting won't happen unless I show up to help make coffee? Mm-hmm. Well, then I guess I better, And managed to, stitch a whole week together. And at which, at what point I thought I was floating on thin air. I was the Messiah. So that was in concert with this strange turn of events where my mom, who had introduced me to the Dharma punks scene through a list of other connections, gave me the Dharma punks book when it came out, and then the others, and somehow I managed to find that Dharma punks group up here in San Francisco long before I got sober. And I just thought it was one of the weirdest fucking things ever, and I was into it. I would just kind of sneak away on Friday nights, and I would sit there and meditate with these kind of criminal looking people, and then but I didn't quite have it figured out yet. Maybe I'll get back to that. Anyway, on this day after the week after I got sober, I had this book, another book that my mom had given me. It was still in the envelope because I was just a mess. And I was in this, my work truck, which by the way, I sideline. I had discovered some broken glass as I got sober. In my first week of sobriety, there was some broken glass under the seat, and the little kind, tempered glass, all broken up. I said, "Man, that's kind of thick. I wonder what the hell, all my windows are intact." I found a receipt for a replaced windshield in my glove box, and I had paid for it. But that's the intervals of blackout that I had. I actually lost somehow. I don't know to this day how my windshield got smashed, but I managed to get it to a shop, have it replaced, and pay for it. Had the receipt and everything, but had no recollection of it. Anyway, in the back seat of that truck was this envelope. My mom had given me this book, and she was pretty insistent this time. She goes, "Noah's coming back to town, and it'd be nice if you went up to that meeting again." Yeah, But she is mom from a half Italian family, so he can be a pretty big jerk, but if you disobey your mom, that's another level. Okay, going to the meeting. And it was this book launch, and I get there a little early with my week of sobriety, and I reach in the back, and I had torn open the envelope and pulled that out, you know. I mean, like, here it is, it's the same book. And I remember pretty clearly, like, this kind of velvety feel to it. And I look at it and I said, "A Buddha's Path to Recovering from Addiction." I'm like, "You motherfucker." I'm cooked. I went in and I had a pretty good size posse at this thing, and the people were kind of talking about what the vision was, and I was just glued. I was just kind of glued to the screen, you know, and I was in. And I'd had a new sense of sort of adventure, and I was like, "Hey man, I'm your guy," you know. And he goes, "Why don't you go to the meeting?" He goes, "Enrique here, he's set up a meeting. He's moving to this other place across the side of the park. You go over there and check it out and introduce yourself and, you know, show up at the meetings a little bit." And I did. And it turned out Enrique was moving to the other side of the bay, and we kind of hit it off. So he said, "Why don't you keep showing up here and make sure you raise your hand, because we're going to need secretaries pretty soon." So it was like right away, I was just into it. And then this, this guy that it would be they called me the angry man under the stairs, because I wanted to be of service, even though I was kind of still fucked up half the time going to the Dharma Punks meeting. But I knew how to work well, so I'd be the guy, you know, telling everybody how to do it with unloading the chairs from under the stairs. Anyway, and then I'd get there and sit in the back with my hoodie on and, you know, pissed, meditating. Fuck, weird is that? But I became like, I was sitting in front, and like every time Vinny, who's running the show at the time, so like any announcements, I just jump right up and say, "I'd like to tell everybody about Refuge Recovery. It's a new recovery program. It's an alternative to the one you already have. You can do both." I was just an instant spokesperson for the thing. And I just had no fear. You know, I had some, a little bit of stage time, but never like speaking in front of a crowd with some sobriety. And I just felt like, wow, I feel okay about this. And was just bought in. So that gave me, you know, I felt this sense of a peer-led organization, with some time like following what was left of the Grateful Dead around, and then like being in the punk scene, I got that. Like, it's not what's going on the stage isn't the show. You know what I mean? Like, what's happening out here is just as good as what's going on up there. So we're all kind of like in control of making the scene happen. Important to remember as a member in this community. So I was excited about it, and then with all that excitement, or when about a week or so of sobriety, I think I was getting the last of my withdrawal drugs from CVS, and I walk into CVS and I see Emily walking the other way. She's getting something out of the 1 hour photo. Anybody remember 1 hour photos? That's how fucking long I've been sober. So she's coming out of there, and we see each other. I'd known Emily for a long time. We lived in a small community, and we actually dated about 20 years before this time. And you know that thing, you kind of like recognize each other and go like, "Oh yeah, you know, I think I used to like you," you know. And you know, things had become a mess with me at home, but I wasn't going to present that way. And like, just, you know, like when you're new, you just have no filter. Like, there's just total oversharing everywhere you go. You can't wait to tell everybody what a huge mess you were. So I did. That I just totally hit rock bottom. I was just like the worst ever. You know, I just dove this fucking thing into the ground. I've been, you know, disaster zone. And I was in the hospital with withdrawals. And she looks at me, she goes, "Me too." You know what I mean? So we were off to the races. We became friends. I mean, we lived kind of down the road from each other. Like, she was having a garage sale, you know, and showed up. And a few weeks later, I told her, I said, I'm excited about these meetings I go to. I wish you would come with me. And she did. And we were really just friends in recovery, honestly. And FWABs, Emily coined the term FWABs, friends without benefits. And we did recovery, man. And she loved the meeting up there in San Francisco too. And one thing led to another over in the next several years. I mean, we just stayed with it. We had, it would take turns leading that meeting, and then couldn't get enough, so we started our own in our little town here. It grew. We went to a slightly bigger town closer to the city, a place called Pacifica. We ended up, you know, as two little bunnies will do when they're in a small cage together, we ended up falling in love and developing a, you know, an intimate relationship, married today. Six years now. Well, I better get that right, huh? Refuge Recovery was blowing up. And, you know, we've helped facilitate the start of other meetings in San Francisco. Things like Kaiser Hospital called Enrique at times. He was one of the black representatives, and he was busy. He goes, "Hey, would you ever talk to these muckety mucks at Kaiser?" I'm like in my, you know, car arts and stuff. "Sure, dude." You know, and it was exciting. It was exciting to see this thing grow like that. And hey, Andrew, what time did I start blabbing like this?
Actually, Candace, you're keeping an eye on time. I think so. No? Oh my God. I'm so sorry. I have no idea.
Y'all are in trouble.
Those got right. It. We're about 15 minutes. Yeah?
Okay. You're good. Yeah. I'm keeping time. 15
All right.
minutes.
All right. 5:55 it is then. Right about all the time that this was going on, in the early part of it, Emily and I went to a retreat that Noah was leading, and it was beautiful. It's in a really beautiful area here, just in Big Sur. And this is where I had the opportunity to kind of pull Noah aside and say, "Hey, like I'm ready, you know?" And he's like, "What?" I go, "You know, to do what you do," like that, you know, like I had that kind of ego. You're like, "What you do looks easy. I'm gonna do that." And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Aren't you a carpenter or something?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, just do that, you know." I'm like, "Fuck." You know, he goes, "Well, you know, the Dharma Punks is becoming against the stream of San Francisco." He goes, "We need a stage built. We need some shoe shells. We need some walls and doors and stuff." And he goes, "Gonna help us out with that, you know?" I'm a Dharma teacher, you know? What he did was so skillful. It was so brilliant because it kept me right-sized. And really, at the time, I was really upset. I had a lot of self-resentment. Like, why am I still doing construction work? I should have gotten out of this thing. My body was in so much pain. I realized I was using alcohol for my pain. I was just awful, so much pain. But he placed me in that community as someone that was valued and was of service. And it really did, you know, plant my roots there in such a profound way. And that's just what I did. I built the stage that my idols would come and teach on. And all the Sangha members would put their shoes in the shells that I built. It was a built-in fixture that felt so good, you know? And it, you know, even though I didn't have the sobriety time yet to enter into sort of any official training, I snuck around the side and did stuff like become an MBSR certified teacher and taught kids through going through the 1 year of mindful schools training program, taught kids in high school. Took other courses on mindfulness-based substance abuse treatment for teens. And on Saturdays, I was helping out the mind-body awareness program, going into juvenile halls and doing what I could there, being an assistant facilitator and facilitating. And then eventually, 2017, the same year that Emily and I got married in Against the Stream on the stage that I built by our teacher, I was admitted into their first year of teacher training. And what happened after that was unfortunate. You know, there was some controversy and some a lot of division in our community, and things fell apart for Against the Stream, and unfortunately, Refuge Recovery got pulled into that too. You know, we suffered quite a bit of loss, and it was going to be a time of rebuilding. So this this first like facilitator training program I was in with a group of 30 or so, figured it was curtains for that. It was a bit of a period, but you know what? I hung in there with what I knew was right, that I wasn't going with the herd like I had ever done before. Said something doesn't seem right here. To be all these people that are gathered together here to be supportive of one another and forgiving no matter what, are all of a sudden, you know, running for the hills. And I was hearing, you know, at least a direct report from one side of the story and a lot of rhetoric from the other. So I became even closer to the few that understand the sort of, you know, mosh pit protocol. When someone falls down, you know, step on him, you help him up. So we're in a pretty tight community. I was at the time was a regional representative for Refuge Recovery, 700 live groups, and this kind of all got boiled down to the core elements. And what grew out of that was really beautiful. I had a really nice, you know, intimate relationship with our founder. We feel like we're family now. And there was a smaller group of facilitators, and I still like that word. Like when I leave my groups, I consider it it's a facilitation role. You know, that's just it. I want to facilitate the energy and the spirits that are alive. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the study and the testing and kind of like being put on the spot and seeing if you could pull it off or what. And there's just a few of us, you know, so it's kind of cool. And it's taken all this time, really. It's taken like a long time for me to feel like to sit here and say like I'm proud of myself. You know, I really am. I feel good. I feel like I've done some good things, and you know, and I couldn't have done any of it fucked up. Like I had to stay sober, and I'll take some responsibility for that. I show up to meetings. I speak when I'm asked. And I share my thoughts openly and honestly, and you know, try to be of service without you know, being overbearing. So there's that. Now for the gory part, huh? I mean, everybody loves a little gory stories. I'm gonna, I think I'll forego any of the, I don't know, sometimes feels like glamorizing. I mean, I got some pretty wild stories about being a drunk idiot. But I'd rather tell you how bad it was, really. So this is a little note that I wrote. The schedule of a day in the life of this alcoholic about 10 years ago. So in contrast, at 3 a.m. I come to. I'm on the couch, still dressed and dirty, TV's on. There's a little less left in the glass, so I drink it, take a look around and try to piece together the night. It looks like there was some attempt at eating. There's probably some more in the freezer. Nope, in the garbage, a fifth on top of a couple of champagne bottles. 6 a.m., I'm up and in pain everywhere, and I know what's next. I get in the shower and the convulsions start, like someone belting me in the gut with a bat. Dry heaving, uncontrolled loud wails accompanied with bile. Shaking head to toes, I pull it together, and looking in the mirror, I see that guy. I remember a time when I used to say as I looked down the bar, if I ever wind up looking like that guy, I'm going to quit. Now I'm looking at him. 6:30 a.m. I'm running through ways of getting out of work and explaining the sounds in the shower must be some kind of acid reflux problem. I'll see a doctor about it someday. Those are called acute alcohol withdrawal symptoms, by the way. 6:45 a.m. First stop, liquor store, head down, hoodie on, a beeline to the soda aisle for ginger ale and a quick loop around the side for a half pint. In my truck, I stretch around back like I'm looking for something in the back seat so I can duck down and slug half the bottle and chase it with the soda. Sometimes it won't stay down. So I crack the door, cover my mouth, and re-swallow what doesn't spill out of my mouth. Then pour the rest into the soda can for a ride into town. I ditched the empty in the store's garbage can and head off. 7:15 a.m. Picked up what I need for the job, finished the soda, so it's the gas station I know sells booze next. Same program, but this time two sodas and a pint. 12 noon, a couple of beers with a taco if I can swing it, and I'll pick up a pint and sodas for the rest of the day. Either way, I'm only going to function for a couple more hours. If it's physical stuff, there's some reason I need to knock off early. When I was doing management stuff, I had to get off the road. I nearly passed out a couple of times at freeway speeds. I had to at least get back in the vicinity of home by 3 or 4 o'clock. 3:30 p.m., there's a place that sells half pints in the freezer, a nice treat for the ride home. 4 p.m., I have a seat at the bar like it's my first well-deserved drink of the day. A double shot and a beer lands in front of me without asking. This will be the first of 3 or 4 rounds, depending on my mood. It means a call is placed for cocaine. Just a bump to level out. It doesn't sell bumps. A bindle it is. 6 p.m., I've got half a bindle in me before I have to share it. Picked up a fifth on the way and a bottle of champagne. Dinner, optional, is a bag of chips.
5 minutes, yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
That's great, man. Thank you very much. I had this great idea of going through the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path in my Sheridan night, but I had so much fun kind of telling you the from sobriety to today part that I'll just have to save that idea for next time. I mean, there what I just told you was addiction creates suffering. What created that suffering? Initially, probably the form of craving that says, I don't want to be me. I didn't want to be in the situation. Addiction, I've learned, comes from 3 main factors: genetics, trauma of some form, and environment, or just simply access. And I qualify for all 3. Cessation, third noble truth, isn't quite the way it seems in the Dharma teachings. We don't just get to simply like let go. In fact, in my case, I had to learn that like my suicidal tendencies really were sort of true, and that I had to murder the alcoholic. I had to kill I had to kill one of us without killing the other. It's a delicate operation, and the only way you can do that is with a whole team. So this sangha really is just the one that was able to sort of, and it's a weird way to say this in a Buddhist meeting, but like totally murder me as an alcoholic, and totally help me, you know, like as a baby, come up from being born as myself again. And this path, it's all right there. I mean, it's spelled out so beautifully in this book, The Noble Eightfold Path. It's just been, you know, adopted so well to recovery. I personally, my perspective is that the Buddha wrote a recovery program for all humans. And I love the line in the book that says that the addict is just I'm going to forget it now. Severe manifestation of the normal human condition, something like that. Recovery is totally possible. You don't have to drink no matter what, or use no matter what. I promise there's an answer in this program that will totally solve that problem for you. Stay with it, ask questions, get a mentor, be of service. Thank you.
Fuck yeah.
Just wow.
I'm throwing you so much, Jeff. Jeff.
You're fantastic.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Can you say that again?
Thank you. Privilege.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you so much. Thank you, Jeff. That was amazing.
That was a privilege.
So tonight we celebrate birthdays and milestones. If you